Welcome to Behavioral Health Today, a podcast by Triad Behavioral Health, where we cover trending topics in behavioral and mental health. This podcast is designed to share unique and relevant topics occurring within the world, our communities, and bring them a mental health perspective.
Welcome to Behavioral Health Today. I'm your host, Dr. Graham Taylor, and today I'm joined by Stephanie Taylor, school psychologist and clinical director for educational services at Presence Learning. Stephanie has experience in teaching and school psychology, serving a variety of students, schools, and communities. After joining Presence Learning in 2014, she's been able to provide her expertise in education to develop and launch psychoeducational services aimed at providing school psychology services, tele-assessment, and general behavioral and mental health services for students. Today, Stephanie joins us to talk about teletherapy and psychoeducation. Stephanie, welcome to our show. It's so nice to have you here.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you here. Thank you. Well, as I was starting out, Presence Learning is aimed at providing school psychology services, the tele-assessment, the general behavioral mental health services via partnering with schools and districts of all types and sizes. So as we're talking about this, we're starting out, explain to us how you see the implementation of tele-services and its role within education.
Absolutely. There's a lot of meat to that question, so I'll dive in. First, in general, for schools that are providing what we call special education related services, which are the services like speech therapy, occupational therapy, school psychology services, counseling, as well as the assessments that identify students for those services, as well as inform interventions. I mean, there's just a lot going on that schools are trying to provide to their students who have these needs. And across the board, there's a shortage of all of those professionals. And part of teletherapy and Presence Learning in particular was born around the concept of redistributing that supply. So I think about like a rural community that struggles to fill a school psychology opening. They are going to continue to struggle year after year, most likely, because they can't get people to move to their community. On the converse, there are urban settings where they're either competing with hospitals for those same professionals because those same service types can also work in hospitals and typically be paid more to work in hospitals or acute care settings. So there's a lot of competition in urban settings as well as the fact that, you know, all the complications of like getting from one location to the other and lost time to, you know, driving and getting through traffic across town. There are a lot of reasons why different settings and different schools and different scenarios might engage and or consider teletherapy or teleservices for their school. And that's really where Presence Learning was born, is saying, actually, there are people out there who want to be in the workforce, but for various reasons, you can't get them. For example, I was talking to some school psychologists in Pittsburgh, and they were mentioning how their whole graduating class doesn't know if they're going to have jobs because Pittsburgh apparently is very inundated with school psychologists. So it's actually super competitive here. And yet we have other places where they don't even have a school psychology program and they have no graduates coming out and they really don't know how to attract people to their area. So we've got these pockets of supply, as well as we've got an entire other demographic of people who don't necessarily want to be full-time in the workforce, or they maybe want to work while their children are at preschool or are in kindergarten, but they want to be able to have some control over their own schedule as to when they're home and when they start services. And those people will join the workforce if we allow them a way to connect to schools that is not just driving there and being there for 40 hours a week. So I really look at it as the main value that we can provide and that teletherapy in general can provide is getting that supply redistributed so that people who need those services by these like related service professionals can actually obtain it. And that's really the crux of the entire thing right there.
I like that. We've been doing a couple of shows on telemental health, particularly with COVID being in place. And we're talking about just access to some of the rural areas that people do not have access to services around. You're talking about doing the same type of a thing with quality professionals, bringing people access, ease of access, really, by going online. And that's a huge part of people being able to benefit from what the services that are out there. They just can't access them sometimes. So this teleservices really, it sounds like, has an opportunity to make an impact on some of the students and families' lives. Talk about the impact you're seeing the presence learning telehealth services platform providing people coming in for services. What is that impact?
So as I mentioned, other than just the fact that they now have access to professionals that they didn't have access to before, which is always going to be kind of like that foundational problem that is being solved. Above and beyond that, what we're really seeing, and I do want to like frame this just a teeny bit as well, because, you know, presence learning specifically has been doing this for 11 years now, and we have millions of sessions delivered to students. And this is something that we've been invested in long before, you know, the current pandemic and this switch. And so it's nice to see that people are seeing what remote services that mental health, teletherapy can do. But also it's completely viable on its own as an alternate to in-person services, even when in-person services are actually an option. And some of the reasons why I feel so passionate about that is because of what we're seeing with students and the success that they're having. So I'm going to speak specifically about mental health for just a minute. The students that interact with our platform, where the student comes and joins the therapist via the computer, but through our proprietary platform, and then we've got the therapist on the other end and they're connecting. And what we're seeing now are all sorts of things that we didn't know were going to happen. Things like students on the autism spectrum. A lot of students become overwhelmed by too much sensory overload. And actually having people in the room with them sometimes has actually been uncomfortable to them. So when they're working on skills like eye contact and they're working on, you know, some social skills, having somebody physically across the table from them, it's actually a little bit hard to get them engaged in the services or engaged in the goals because it's just a lot of overload. And we're finding that for those students, especially, that doing it remotely is providing them with a sense of like, actually, I can practice looking at you and making eye contact and doing some of these skills on the computer because it feels more comfortable. It's not so scary, essentially. So I'm particularly seeing things for students on the autism spectrum, but we're also seeing students who didn't want to engage in any type of mental health services in their school setting. Because either one, they just didn't want to be seen going into the counseling office. They didn't want to, I don't know, run into the therapist at lunchtime and have the therapist say hello to them and then other kids would know that they speak to them. Or they didn't want to talk to somebody that knows their family or knows their brother and dealt with their brother and they're worried they're going to be judged by what their brother's behaviors were. And this idea that the person they're speaking to is not in their community, that's far away, that is coming from a completely clean slate, and all the kids on their site see is them sitting in front of a computer, and they don't know what else is happening, has led to a level of actual engagement in the therapy that we didn't necessarily foresee. It's just been one of those benefits that was like, oh, I mean, that totally makes sense now. But it wasn't the purpose of providing the service remotely originally.
That's pretty cool to be able to see that that's almost a little bit of a marketing piece too for schools or communities you're going to be working with to say, hey, this is some of the added benefit of having these things online, the engagement, the level of arousal that might get kicked up, you know, in person versus online. Are there some inherent challenges that you see? You know, in some ways you're talking about the unexpected benefits, and those are great to notice. And in addition to what you're already doing, those additional benefits are kind of a nice added perk. How about some of the challenges? What are some of the things you're seeing that might be part of it as well, and how you work through those?
Definitely. It's always a double-edged sword, I think. I would say that across the board, the biggest challenge is actually just the perception of adults in understanding that this is a viable option. A lot of adults just cannot envision how students can make a connection with another human being remotely. That's just not the way that they have gone about making their social connections. And they don't see how it could be comparable or at all better than in some situations. And so I think changing the perception of adults, both parents and maybe some counselors as well, some school administrators, it's like they have to sort of see it in action and see how students respond to it before they'll really buy in. Because in their world, you don't make friends with people you don't know. I had a student that was talking to me about their best friend and saying how all this stuff about, well, my best friend this and my best friend that. And I came to find out that it's actually somebody that they have been playing PlayStation games with online, and they have never met them in person. They have only ever interacted with them through the PlayStation platform, and they consider them legitimately their best friend. And they're like, we've been doing this for like 5 or 6 years now, and we have connected, and that was considered their best friend. And I just think adults have a hard time wrapping their mind around the fact that kids could actually feel that level of connection to somebody remote.
They're just very different paradigms, aren't they? And different entry points into relationships. And yet the degree of sharing or the degree of knowing can have some similarities. It's just a different paradigm.
Absolutely. And I would say the second challenge that always comes to mind is confidentiality. When I'm there in person with a student, I can have a bit more control over what rooms we're in and who is within earshot. And I'm there for, you know, for safety and security for the students, so I don't need another person there. When you're just delivering services remotely, it's a little bit different, where all of the things are able to be overcome, but it does take a little bit of thought and planning to say, so what's our crisis plan here? What's our plan if the student decides to just get up and walk out of the room, right? Who am I calling? What am I doing? I'm not on the ground with that student, and I may not be from that community, so I need to know if the student mentions any, you know, harm to self or harm to others, who am I reporting to? I know what my reporting requirements are as a professional, but what are the exact agencies locally? What does the school require for me to notify? And also, just in general, how do I make sure that nobody else is hearing the student talk to me? So some of those things have to really be thought about carefully and worked through. So that is a part of something to be thought through so that it doesn't become an obstructive challenge.
Sure. How about, in addition to some of the perceptions and just the different paradigm within which we're asking and providing students an opportunity to work in, and then the confidentiality kind of privacy piece, those things get to be put into place. We begin to make that transition. How about equipment for kids that are using this? Talk about that piece.
Absolutely. What we're also finding in presence learning, we deliver services to students who are in the brick and mortar school setting, but we also deliver services to students who are at home. And that's whether they were already enrolled in a virtual school and have been well pre-COVID, or students who were receiving schools in the school setting and now they are home. You know, now the school is shut down, they've closed for COVID, so they're now at home. And really looking at equipment and all those scenarios and making sure that the student has the right equipment is always one of those things that really has to be checked off to solidify before you want to engage in services. The video component is so important, as well as for the presence learning platform. A lot of our interactive features that we have for therapeutic activities is also super important. So we've got to make sure that they have the computer with the webcam. Obviously, the correct internet speed. We have to make sure that they have headsets so that nobody else can hear what's happening, and it helps with the confidentiality, but also just to make sure that it's like coming through clear. So with students transitioning home, some of that has been a challenge for school districts as well, to make sure that students have those things at home so they can continue to receive their services.
So let's say we have the perception, the paradigm accepted, and different ways of learning and what the kids are going to be experiencing. We have the confidentiality and privacy in place and the equipment kind of all geared up and all ready to go. So I'm a student coming into your services and I am logging on. Walk me through maybe an experience that I might have with you that gives us an idea of what the students actually go through.
Absolutely. The students, you're going to log on, you're going to knock to enter my virtual therapy room to be FERPA and HIPAA compliant, you know, so keep the confidentiality, maintain that nobody can enter the platform, enter my room inadvertently and see the student in there. So there's, of course, some security and safety measures in there. They knock, I let them in, they come into my room, they're going to see me, they're going to see my video feed, they're going to start their video feed. And then we're going to have a whiteboard that is next to us. So depending on if it's a new student, if it's a brand new student, right, I'm going to be working on rapport building activities, just like I would do in person. I am going to be working on finding out what their interests are. I'm going to be asking a lot of questions. And I might do that depending on the age of the child or the particular needs of the student. I might do that through a game, just like I would have done in person. I might pull up a game board and assign them game pieces. And we're going to spin the spinner and I'm going to say like, okay, for whatever number the spinner lands on, you have to tell me that number of things about yourself. And then I'm also able to pull in videos. I use a lot of social stories, particularly to talk about like how to respond in certain situations. A lot of research-based programs have worksheets, something that's like a really guided activity. And then I can make that through Presence Learning Platform interactive, and we can fill it out together and we can kind of go through the therapeutic activities as well. But the thing that I super love is that the Presence Learning, we have a library where all of the therapists that work for us, they can upload the particular activities that they like to use. So it's a crowdsourcing of therapy activities and of materials. And so then I can go in and say, my student loves horses. What do we have in here that is about horses and that I want to use as an engagement activity? And I can search for that and it'll pop up anything that anybody else has already added that is particular to horses.
You can really personalize it to make it really applicable, to make the learning process much more engaging. That's pretty cool.
Absolutely. Or I can pull in YouTube videos too. That's my favorite. I have a whole section of Big Bang Theory videos where it's just like a minute or two and it's always something of Sheldon doing something. And when we talk about like, and I use this as a starting point to talk about like what social skill might he have been missing in this, or what might have been a better way to solve this situation. And we can kind of, I can kind of pull in whatever I need to, which I think that's another secondary benefit of doing things remotely and particularly through the Presence Learning Platform is that I can pull things on demand so that I can really respond to what the conversation is that day, rather than saying like, well, this is the activity I'd planned and I don't have other things like here or available or ready and I had that in my other office. Everything is just in one spot and I pull it up as I need it so that I can be dynamic to the student's needs.
I love learning processes that allow us to teach things, but to teach them in really engaging and very enjoyable kind of fun ways. And I love the idea of going on and getting a Sheldon clip and the idea of kind of engaging and laughing and being playful. What a great way to teach and have access to so many resources in that is very personal in that way. Tell me a story that you're kind of proud of. Maybe one of the students you worked with that's kind of a standout and how Presence Learning really helped this young person go through some things or attain some things that kind of get you up in the morning.
I have two stories that I like to tell over and over and over. They are by far my favorite. So the other thing that I'm able to do is group therapy rather than just individual. And so I had a group. So my first favorite part of the story, there was a district that was working with Presence Learning and they had very small elementary schools in a couple of very rural small towns. And then those elementary schools all came to the same middle school and they all came to the same high school, but they themselves were very small. And at each of these elementaries, they had a student with autism, but in the respective schools, so each of those students was the only student with autism in that entire school because of their size. So what we were able to do is to have a social skills group with those students, and they were able to join together and be learning together and be making connections to each other and seeing somebody that was like them. And the way that they interacted and actually lit up, so much so that a couple of them connected outside of Presence Learning. So like their parents, you know, they reached out to their parents and asked for permission, and the two parents connected each other and they ended up meeting once a month and having play dates because they had made that significant of a connection through the group therapy.
So good. When you bring these kids together, you get to allow them to see, maybe even the parents too, that there's some universality here. There are others like me out there doing these things, and together we can form this community or just friendships along the way. So there's almost like normalization that this is a great environment for us to be working in. What's your second story?
Second is I had a student who actually was at a very large high school, and it just so happened that the three counselors that were available to her were all men. And she had been on the radar as needing extra support, as needing mental health needs, showing consistent behavioral issues since middle school. And they were really trying to get her to interact and to engage in the therapy services. But it seems like anytime they, you know, they tried all three different counselors and she was like, nope, I'm not talking to this person. Like, I refuse. And we, I think as more of a last ditch effort, they reach out to Friends Learning to see what happens. And something about the fact that she was able to talk to a female and we could actually start to delve into some of the things that were happening to her that she was going through and that she was able to share with me as to why she was experiencing some of these or what the function of some of her behaviors were. We were able to let her draw out and talk to me about some things that had been happening to her that did need to be reported. And she did end up needing to be removed from her home. It's something that had been going on that long, but she just didn't feel comfortable talking to a male about it. And it literally just took having options of who the person was and to be able to allow her to build rapport, to be able to talk about that, which I think is such a beautiful thing. Because again, if you think about it, that secondary benefit, when you hire people on the ground, they have to be generalists. They're pinch hitters. They've got to do everything. And they have to try to address every need that a student has. But there are going to be situations where that doesn't work. So having an option of teletherapy to say, like, actually, we can bring in somebody that might be diverse from what we already have, and we can see if it works for this group of students without having to, like, hire an entire another salaried person. After having experienced this with this young woman, to me, that's just, it's just so important.
What you're doing is you're reminding us of the importance of the mental health component that oftentimes doesn't get attention. We did a show recently on virtual reality and using different strategies and techniques and virtual reality opportunities to help folks in both their parasympathetic nervous system, to help them with other illnesses or struggles that they might be having. And the fact that roughly around 68% of the people that present with some type of medical illness have a coexisting mental health component to it that doesn't oftentimes get addressed. But it's the same thing that you're reminding us in the learning environment. What's happening in the home? What's happening on the, you know, on the playground? What's happening in this person's own development? Those things don't oftentimes get the attention. And we're focused just on the academics, or just on the compliance or lack thereof. And we're missing a real big picture behind it. And what you're saying here, that is really a phenomenal opportunity, is that we don't have to send them down the street or across town to see another professional who can address the mental health components, but you can identify them in your first interaction with the students in your ongoing role, but then also have some other professionals that can come alongside the treatment for this young person that can really be beneficial. That is a tremendous additional piece to this, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think, at least for me, it's important to note, as someone personally who is a school psychologist and not a clinical psychologist, there really is a difference in how different professionals approach an issue. Some of us come at it from an educational perspective, in which case why I always say I'm over psychoeducational services at Presence Learning, because when working with schools and students in the school setting, everything sort of gets framed back into how is it affecting them in the school setting and how is it impeding their ability to not only interact with their academic instruction, but to gain social skills, to gain connection to their peers, like all the things that we know have to happen for somebody to be a wholly educated person. All those things happen in the educational system, right? Not just reading, writing, and math. And when you're coming at something from a medical perspective, it is slightly different because you're looking at them in a different way than just framed from their education. And I think it's good sometimes for us to think about providing mental health services in the same way that we're looking at providing academic services, which is schools often have measures of what are their reading proficiencies, right? We do those in elementary, we do them, you know, their statewide testing. Kids that are significantly discrepant in their academic skills are identified for additional services or for special education. There are multiple pathways for students who are lagging with their academic skills. But if I could have a magic wand, I would want people to look at students' behavioral mental health skills through that same framework, which is, do we know that what we're doing is meeting the needs of that general student, right? The tier one student. Do we actually know that 85% of our students are you know, being successful with what's being provided right now, both with supports and the discipline measures, or not just having discipline, but actually having like proactive teaching opportunities, time to develop social skills. And then if we're not meeting the need of 85% of our students, how do we go back and make some school-wide initiatives and some school-wide services, rather than focus on the kids who keep coming up as problematic? Because if 40% of the students are having behavioral issues or having mental health struggles, then that tells us that we're not actually doing a great job for setting that tier one of services. And if we looked at those services, like we look at academics, I think we could get pretty far in what our students need to come out of school being successful and ready for the workplace.
Really good. Really good. So with so many opportunities to help students, teachers in the classroom, families, we have a number of professionals that listen to our show, as well as lay people. Talk about some of the resources and how can people get in touch with your program, and what's the best way to do so?
Absolutely. For Presence Learning, the best way is to visit our website, which is www.presencelearning.com. If you are a school district looking for the service, you can be put in touch with any of our sales folks who will reach out and talk to you about it. You can also, if you're a clinician thinking you might want to contact with Presence Learning, you can apply there. But if you're just anybody that wants to learn more, we have resources. We have information about the research that we, you know, base our services on. We have information about just generally what is telehealth, what is teletherapy. So a general person can go there to learn about Presence Learning. As far as teletherapy or telemental health in general, I also always suggest for people to go to APA, American Psychological Association, so APA.org. They have some COVID-specific topics, as well as just general information about telehealth and its history and, you know, its value today.
Very good. Well, you clearly are having some fun with what you do.
I really do. I think for anyone who has been a teacher or has been related services provider on the ground with students, when you first step away, there's always that sense of sadness of, am I really having an impact anymore? Am I really doing something? Because you're not getting that like daily affirmation from interactions with students anymore. I am really, really feel lucky to say that I can still now have that feeling of like being impactful, even though I'm not directly working with students anymore, because working at Presence Learning still allows me to like move this mission of telehealth and of reaching students who wouldn't have services otherwise forward.
Well, congratulations on what you guys have put together and what you're doing and the benefits. I know, even from the stories you're sharing, that people are experiencing, the kids and the families and the schools. Very, very exciting. Congratulations. Well done. It's been great to be with you today. Thank you so much for joining and sharing Presence Learning with us.
Thank you for having me.
And for those listening, thanks for being part of our podcast. And we look forward to having you join us next time on Behavioral Health Today.
We appreciate all the support from our community, and if you like our show, one of the best ways you can support it is by giving us a 5-star rating and leaving a review. Behavioral Health Today is a podcast part of the Tried Behavioral Health Network, all rights reserved.